All right, so imagine this. State's got to make some budget cuts, and they decide to, scale back some Medicaid benefits. Seems like a pretty standard thing, right? Happens all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it unfortunately does happen a lot, but it gets kind of tricky when you realize that this like neutral sounding policy ends up hitting people with disabilities a lot harder.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's really the heart of this Alexander V. Choate case.
Okay.
It makes us ask, like, when does equal treatment, like on paper, under the law, when does that actually result in unequal outcomes in the real world?
So let's break this down. We're talking about Tennessee back in 1984,
Right.
and they decided to reduce the number of hospital days that Medicaid would cover, went from 20 down to 14.
Yep.
It seems like a small change at first glance, but
But then you dig into the data a little bit and you start seeing a really different picture emerge.
right.
Almost 28%, a huge percentage of disabled Medicaid recipients needed more than 14 days of hospital care every year, compared to, less than 8% of patients without disabilities.
Okay, so a big difference.
Yeah, so suddenly that small change has some really big implications, right, for different groups of people.
Yeah, so even if a policy doesn't, directly single out people with disabilities, the impact, like you said, it could be huge.
For sure.
And this is where Section 504, the Rehabilitation Act, comes in, right?
Yes.
From 1973.
Yes, exactly.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that and what it means for this case?
Absolutely. So Section 504 is super important here. Basically, it says that you can't discriminate against someone just because they have a disability in any program that receives federal funding.
Okay.
And obviously that includes Medicaid.
Makes sense.
And so the people who brought the case, the plaintiffs in Alexander V. Choate, they argued that this Tennessee policy, even though on the surface it sounds neutral, was essentially denying them what they called meaningful access to health care,
Okay.
which they said violated Section 504.
Meaningful access. That sounds like it's pretty crucial here.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean, though, like in a legal sense?
It's actually way more nuanced than you might think.
Okay.
And the Supreme Court, they really wrestled with this in the Alexander V. Choate case. And ultimately, they ended up siding with Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
They said that the policy didn't violate Section 504 because it did still provide some like baseline level of health care access,
Okay.
even if it wasn't, perfect or ideal for every single person.
Look, hold on. Even though this policy had a bigger impact on people with disabilities, the court basically said it was fine because it didn't completely cut off health care for them.
That's basically it. Yeah.
Doesn't that seem like kind of a low bar, though?
Yeah, and that's actually been one of the big criticisms of this decision.
Okay.
Critics say that by just focusing on whether someone can, technically get access to health care without really looking at the quality of that access or if it's even enough to meet their needs,
Yeah.
is basically gives a green light to policies that, even if they don't intend to, they end up keeping certain groups at a disadvantage.
So it sounds like the court maybe was trying to find some middle ground, but ended up falling short when it came to actually making sure that people with disabilities have equal access to health care.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
So we're seeing how this case, it goes way beyond just this one specific Medicaid policy. It really brings up some bigger questions about disability rights law in general.
Absolutely. This case really brings up that tension between, making sure everyone has equal opportunity, but also dealing with the reality of limited resources.
Yeah.
And it forces us to ask some tough questions, like, is it enough for a policy to just be neutral on the surface, even if it has these, like, really clear negative consequences for certain groups?
Yeah, I mean that's a big one.
Right. And where do we draw that line between what's a reasonable accommodation and what's asking too much of a program? These are exactly the kinds of complex issues that Alexander V. Choate throws out there.
Right. And it sounds like this case is important for more than just, healthcare.
Absolutely.
It's like it has implications for disability rights as a whole.
Exactly. Yeah. You're absolutely right. That meaningful access standard that came out of Alexander V. Choate, it's been cited in tons of cases since then.
Yeah.
Education, voting rights, employment,
Oh, wow.
you name it. It's become like a key legal principle for figuring out whether policies and practices actually give people with disabilities a fair shot.
So this case, it's still having a big impact today. And I bet, especially for lawyers, understanding this whole idea of meaningful access, that's got to be crucial for their work.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, whether you're a lawyer advocating for someone with a disability or you're representing, a government agency, Alexander V. Choate gives you a really important framework for how to approach these cases. It shows how important it is to look beyond just the literal words of the law and to consider how those words actually play out in the real world. Do they create barriers for people? Mm-hmm. Are they preventing people from fully participating in society?
This has definitely been a lot to take in. I'm starting to see how this case, this Alexander V. Choate, it's not just some old legal case from the past, you know?
Yeah.
It's really a framework for understanding these complex issues of equality.
Yeah.
And this struggle that we're still having to make sure everyone really does have a fair shot.
Right.
But before we go even deeper into all of that, I think it would be good to unpack a little bit more about how the court came to this decision in the first place.
Yeah, for sure.
What was their reasoning?
Absolutely. Let's dig into that. Yeah, you really hit it when you said that this case, it's about way more than just this one Medicaid policy.
Right.
It really digs into how we understand and apply disability rights law as a whole.
Okay, so help me understand the court's thinking a little better here.
Sure.
They decided unanimously in favor of Tennessee.
Right.
Even though it was pretty clear that this policy put people with disabilities at a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
How do they justify that?
So Justice Marshall, he wrote the majority opinion, and he emphasized that just showing that a policy has a different impact on different groups, that in itself isn't enough to prove that it violates Section 504.
Okay.
His argument was that the policy's goal, which was saving money, that was legitimate.
Yeah.
And any difference in how it affected different groups, that was just an unintended consequence. It wasn't intentional discrimination.
I see. So the court's saying there's a difference between intention and impact.
Exactly.
But couldn't you argue that if you can see that a policy is going to have a negative impact on a certain group, and you just ignore that, isn't that basically the same as intentionally discriminating against them?
That's a really key point, and a lot of people who disagree with the decision bring that up.
Yeah.
They say that the court set the bar too low by focusing just on intent rather than the actual impact.
Yeah.
And they argue that this basically opens the door for policies that keep inequality in place as long as they're presented as neutral and coming from a good place.
That makes me think about other areas where we see this same kind of debate happening, like, for example, in the criminal justice system. Mm. There's a lot of concern about racial bias in sentencing guidelines. Even if those guidelines don't explicitly target certain racial groups, the fact that they end up having a different impact on different groups raises questions about fairness.
That's a great parallel, and it shows why this Alexander V. Choate case is still so relevant today.
Right.
It forces us to really grapple with what equality means in a society where we have these long histories of inequality, systemic inequalities that often result in different outcomes for different groups, even when there's no, like, overt intention to discriminate.
So if simply showing a disparate impact isn't enough to win a case under Section 504, mm-hmm. what would be enough in the court's view? What would actually count as a violation?
The court really stressed that Section 504 is about ensuring what they called even-handed treatment, not necessarily equal results for everyone. So the act, it doesn't guarantee that people with disabilities will have the exact same results as everyone else, but it protects them from being treated differently just because of their disability.
Okay.
So for a policy to actually violate Section 504, it would have to be discriminatory in the way it was designed or carried out.
Gotcha.
Not just in the effects it ends up having.
So going back to our case in Tennessee, if the state had specifically said, we're not going to cover treatments related to certain disabilities, that would be a clear violation, right?
Right, exactly.
But just reducing the number of hospital days across the board, even if it disproportionately affects people with disabilities, that's considered okay because it's applied consistently to everyone.
That's exactly how the court saw it. They made this distinction between what they called reasonable accommodations and fundamental alterations to a program.
Okay.
So reducing hospital days, they saw that as a reasonable accommodation.
Mm-hmm.
But outright denying coverage for certain conditions, that would be a fundamental alteration, and that would not be okay.
It seems like this whole meaningful access standard can be interpreted in a lot of different ways, which could make it hard to apply consistently. How has that played out in other disability rights cases since then?
It's definitely led to a lot of debate. There's no easy formula for determining what meaningful access actually means in every situation.
Right.
Each case has to be looked at individually, taking into account things like the nature of the program, the specific needs of the people involved, and the resources that are available.
Could you give me some examples of how courts have applied this meaningful access standard in other areas?
Sure. One really important case that built on the ideas in Alexander v. Choate is Olmstead v. LC.
Okay.
This case was decided by the Supreme Court in 1999.
Okay.
It involved two women with intellectual disabilities who were being kept in a state psychiatric hospital, even though everyone agreed they could live in the community if they had the right support services.
So in this case, meaningful access wasn't about being physically able to get into a building or a program. It was about having the opportunity to actually live in the community and participate in society.
Exactly. The court decided that keeping people with disabilities in institutions when it wasn't necessary, that violated the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Okay.
Which, like Section 504, prohibits discrimination based on disability.
Right.
They said that people with disabilities have the right to live in the most integrated setting possible, the one that best meets their needs, and that unnecessary segregation keeps harmful stereotypes in place and denies them the chance to fully participate in society.
That's a really powerful example of how this idea of meaningful access can go beyond just physical spaces and include these broader social opportunities.
It really shows how the standard has evolved over time, becoming more complex and including a wider range of rights and freedoms for people with disabilities.
But like you said before, figuring out what meaningful access means in each specific situation, that can be a tough job.
It really can. And as technology keeps advancing, those lines are getting even blurrier.
How so?
Well, think about things like online education, telehealth, and all these new AI-driven services that are popping up. These have the potential to really open up access and opportunities for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But they also create new challenges when it comes to making sure that people with disabilities aren't left out of these advancements.
That's an important point. If we're not careful, the digital world can actually create new barriers for people with disabilities if accessibility isn't built in from the beginning. So meaningful access in the 21st century, it's not just about physical spaces. It also has to include the digital world.
Exactly. And that's why understanding the legal principles that were established in cases like Alexander v. Choate is so important. They provide a framework for figuring out how to ensure equal opportunity in a world that's constantly changing.
It's amazing how a case that was decided decades ago could be so forward-thinking. The specifics might be about hospital days, but that core issue, making sure everyone has meaningful access in a world that's always changing, that feels more relevant now than ever. Feels like we've just scratched the surface of this whole meaningful access thing. You mentioned how technology adds like a whole other layer to it.
Yeah.
Can you give me a specific example of what that looks like in the real world?
Sure. Think about telehealth, which, you know, became super important during the pandemic.
Right.
For a lot of people, you know, especially people with mobility issues, people in rural areas, virtual doctor visits, they were a total game changer.
Yeah, made things a lot easier.
But then you have to ask, like, what about the people who don't have good internet access?
Right.
Or they can't afford the devices they need to do those virtual visits.
Yeah, it's not accessible to everyone.
Right. So suddenly this thing that's supposed to, you know, increase access, it could actually end up excluding the people who can't, you know, keep up with the technology.
So it's like we're solving one problem, but then creating a new one.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's not just healthcare.
Right.
Think about online education or remote work.
Right.
Even accessing government services. More and more of these things are moving online, which sounds great, but only if everyone can actually get online and use those services.
I'm starting to see how Alexander v. Choate, even though it's decided so long ago, it's almost like they could see the future. The details of the case, they were about hospital days, but the bigger issue, this whole idea of making sure people have meaningful access in a world that's constantly changing, that feels more relevant now than ever.
Absolutely. You hit it right on the head. And that's why this case, it's not just something for law students to read about.
Right.
It's something we should all be thinking about. What does meaningful access really mean as technology changes everything around us?
Yeah, good question.
And what responsibility do we all have, you know, policymakers, businesses, individuals, to make sure that everyone is able to benefit from these changes and no one's left behind?
So it's not enough to just understand the legal precedent. We have to take those principles and apply them to the problems we're facing today.
Exactly.
And even try to anticipate the challenges that are coming down the road.
I think that's exactly right. And it means moving beyond just thinking about intent.
Yep.
We need to be more proactive. We need to think about how our decisions, our policies, even the technology we develop, how all of that might affect people with disabilities.
So it's about shifting from being reactive to being proactive.
Yeah.
It's not about waiting for someone to sue to force us to make things accessible.
Right.
It's about designing things from the beginning with accessibility in mind.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And that brings us back to a question we asked earlier. What does meaningful access mean to you? There's no one right answer. It's an ongoing conversation. It's about how we create a truly inclusive society.
I think that's a great point to leave our listeners with today. Alexander V. Choate might be a legal case, but it started a much bigger discussion about fairness, access, and the kind of future we want to build.
I agree.
Thanks so much for taking this deep dive with us.
It's been my pleasure. Hopefully our listeners learned something new today and maybe even feel inspired to think more critically about how they can help create a world where meaningful access is a reality for everyone.